You are listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, happy Monday, guys. We're rolling along. I'm Vanessa Richardson, Paul Gallant, Sean Mapes with you as always. I am in Los Angeles for the All-Star Game. Excited for that. Paul and I both had good weekends. Paul was able to have some fun. You had some fun, didn't you?
It's the first time I've been out to bars in Houston in 6 weeks, which...
Oh, because you've been away.
I've been away, and then I had the COVID. So
you did have the COVID.
Yeah. It was fun. I went out to the area around White Oak, Bobcat Teddy's, a couple other different places. I like Bobcat Teddy's a lot. It's nice. It's kind of divey. It's got a nice little indoor outdoor kind of vibe to it.
Ooh.
So yeah. And then obviously hung out with my bros at Drift for a little bit too. Shout out to Drift.
Drift is cool. I love the hole in the wall vibe, so I'm gonna have to check out. Is it Bobcat Teddy's, you said?
Yes. Yeah, it's a good spot.
Fun. Okay, so I did Astros this weekend, and look, this was not a series to remember. They lost the series to the Oakland A's. Saturday was super fun. Justin Verlander was on fire, setting records, breaking records. Martin Maldonado, of course, had that grand slam, but overall, a lot of injuries, just tired. They had gotten in from the West Coast at 6 in the morning for that first game that they lost. So just kind of a rough weekend for the Astros.
Lots of excuses. I haven't heard you say that maybe, you know, you doing the pre and post was related, because I'm not sure what the number is, and I'm sure that you have every single day been keeping track of that record
but
that the
I
Astros
don't.
Have when you do pre and post. See, well, if you don't, then that means that you're hiding from it. You're hiding from those
something?
Numbers. You're burying your head in the sand. You don't want to know if you are affecting the Astros' winning ways by just being on the television. You don't know because you don't want to know.
Aggressive spray tan might have been bad luck, tell you the truth.
No, it's good. That's good. It's the same color as the Astros. The spray tan is good. Your presence, some people, and by some people I mean literally one person, not Santa on Twitter, is debating whether or not it's good for the Astros.
The Astros are now done with the first half of the season. Obviously, All-Star break has begun. They're 59-32 the first half of the season. This team had said they wanted to get 60 wins before the break. They came pretty close to that. What is your take on the first half in general? Obviously, when they started, their offense was struggling. It was the pitching that carried the team. Now we're at the point to where we have Altuve, who has a little injury. Yordan, we don't know what's going on there. Lance McCullers Jr. finally pitched 2 simulated innings, but no timetable on him. Michael Brantley is out. So what's your take on the Astros, where they're at injury-wise on the first half?
They are exactly where they should be, which is one of the top 2 teams in baseball. It's them and the Yankees right now. They're, of course, going to play the Yankees on that little doubleheader coming out of the All-Star break. The injuries are a little concerning. And Vanessa, as someone who, I don't know why I did, but I was casting YouTube to my TV over the weekend, and all of a sudden, every single next video that played were a bunch of reviews of the Star Wars prequels that I couldn't stop watching because they were very funny.
Wait, they were reviews?
Oh, yeah, they were reviews of the Star Wars prequels, so they just tore them apart, like, limb by limb. It's by this website called... Red Letter Media. So the next thing I know, I spent like 4 to 5 hours just watching this guy in a really kind of sick and sadistic way. Just
That's
rip,
aggressive.
Rip Star Wars limb from limb. But it got me thinking about weaknesses for the Houston Astros going forward. You know, the Death Star had a weakness in the Star Wars movie franchise. There was a little canyon that had a small little exhaust port that if you fired a couple of proton torpedoes in, and if they go straight down the, you know, shaft, they could potentially explode the Death Star. And that's what happens at the end of the first Star Wars movie. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, what is...
thanks for spoiling it.
It's been out for a while, and if you haven't seen it, you're an uncultured savage if you haven't seen Star Wars at this point in your life.
Call me an uncultured savage.
I'm just kidding. I think it is funny how people get so up in arms about it, especially now that I've like gotten older and older and just realized that as the Star Wars universe continues to expand, it just gets more and more disappointing and depressing and crappy. Whatever. Anyway, back to this.
Yes.
What is the Astros' biggest weakness? What is their thermal exhaust port that a couple of proton torpedoes could hit. Because I think that the injuries are now becoming a little bit more annoying, but I don't know that I look at any of the injuries that they have right now and think to myself, oh God, like I'm really nervous. Maybe with Yordan Alvarez, just because it's a hand injury, it's a wrist injury, whatever it is, that's a little bit concerning given how hot he had been leading up to that point and how much it seems like he has been carrying the offense at times. But what really is the weakness? Starting pitching has been good. Bullpen's numbers-wise has been really good. Back of the lineup, maybe we're not thrilled that you could upgrade it in some way, shape, or form, but statistically, at least based off of an AT&T Sportsnet Southwest graphic that I saw in the last couple of weeks, like their 6-9 hitters are doing pretty damn well compared to the rest
their
of baseball.
Their bottom of the order was actually better on Saturday.
Right. So you add all that up, I mean, what is legitimately the weakness right now? And you can share that with us, whether it's at 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN, or on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. What is the weakness right now? I guess if I had to pick one, is maybe you don't feel that confident in the non-named Justin Verlander starters that you would have in a playoff game. I'm assuming you're going to shrink your rotation to three guys. How do you feel about Framber Valdez, who is an all-star but who has been very inconsistent over his career? Do you feel confident in any of those other guys? Say Lance McCullers doesn't end up coming back. I guess that's what I'm looking at. Maybe one of these starting pitchers just having a pants poopage kind of day during a playoff series is a possibility, because they're not the most consistent guys after Verlander.
I think that if they're missing come playoff time, and for whatever reason, they're still missing the bats, and I don't think this is going to happen, by the way, but they're missing some big bats. Let's say that for whatever reason, Yordan, stop. Let's say that for whatever reason, Yordan and Altuve, or maybe it's the combination of Brantley and something happens. Look, at the beginning of the year, their offense struggled. And quite frankly, that game that they won Saturday, Martin Maldonado was the hero of that game. If you look at the way that they hit, it wasn't that strong. So I'm not saying it's their Achilles heel. They're the best team, you know, if one of the best teams in baseball. But if they are missing, Dusty said it yesterday, they are missing the big bat of Yordan and the consistent bat of Michael Brantley. As long as all those guys are there, I think it's fine. But when you look at the guys that step up, yes, it's been Jeremy Peña, which has been wonderful. Yes, you have Martin Maldonado, who had the grand slam. But the more consistent bats, they're going to need that against some of these teams with really good pitching.
You're right on that. How many teams have the kind of pitching, though, that makes you nervous? I'm really curious about, first off, just New York, because, I mean, that's the team that you're ultimately going to play in the playoffs. Assuming, I mean, the season is a failure, complete failure, if you can't even make it to playing New York, or if New York gets further than you. What happens in that series? I honestly don't know. I think we all feel pretty confident just given the way that this series has gone historically. I mean, the Astros have always had the upper hand in the postseason, but, you know, you never know going into it. I'm curious, though, as to how things will look for the Astros lineup, not against necessarily the Yankees starting rotation, but against their bullpen. Their bullpen is supposedly good, and yet I've seen, I think, cracks in the armor over the last couple of weeks. And I feel like pretty good about the idea that if the Astros are able to just make sure that a Yankee starter doesn't go any more than five innings, that they're going to ultimately win out in the end because of the just high quality of bats that they have, and because I just don't. You know, I don't look at that Yankees bullpen in the same way that I would have like 3-4 years ago, even though statistically they're still in the same spot that they've been.
Ryan Pressly, solid as always. He's been great since that disastrous inning against the Yankees. I think it was June 23rd or 24th. He was, you know, bound and determined. And sure enough, he's at, I think, 27 consecutive strikeouts. And that is the tie for the Astros record from 1965. So good job, Ryan Pressly. He's a good example of a bright spot, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Something interesting that we saw before the show, Vanessa, this was courtesy of our guy, Sean Mabes, behind the glass. He saw a tweet that was put out by former Astros GM, guy that you interviewed once,
yeah.
Mr. Jeff Luhnow. So, Apollo Dez from the Apollo team, those guys do a great job just having all sorts of digital content up about Houston
they
sports teams.
They have a lot
of fun. Right. Tweeted out on Saturday, Justin Verlander is an Astro, still wild to me. Thanks, Jeff Luhnow. And Jeff Luhnow retweeted it saying, Jim Crane, A.J. Hinchin, Dallas Keuchel all deserve credit, and James Click for keeping him around, plus many more. But yes, that was a defining moment in modern Astros history, which is, I don't know, like a bit of a pat on the back. But it was the move that put them over the edge. It was the move that really legitimized them as they got closer and closer to the playoffs in 2017. And, I mean, that is the move, right? That's the move where they arrived. Is there any other move that we're looking at that the Astros have done over the last couple of years that we would put anywhere close to it? I mean, the Gerrit Cole trade did work out for the Astros, even though they didn't win a World Series. Zach Greinke was exciting, but it wasn't, you know, as successful as the Cole trade and the Verlander trade had been. Is that the biggest move? Is there another move that we're forgetting? Maybe the Alvarez trade?
I think that's
trade?
The biggest move. I mean, the Alvarez trade, the Alvarez re-signing, you know, I think will end up obviously paying dividends, especially since they didn't have to pay him that much compared to what a lot of people thought they would pay him. I would love to see in 3 to 4 years us looking back and saying the biggest moves of the last 10 years with the Astros are Verlander and Jeremy Pena. I think that there's like, look, that's a big thing to say as a rookie for Jeremy Pena because mm-hmm. he's still so young. But yeah, I totally agree. And I don't think Jeff's bitter. People were surprised to see this. He's now running a soccer team, or should I say football team, in Cancun. And I think he's at peace with everything that happened. So shout out to Jeff and AJ, who got fired despite everybody around the league doing what they did. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're going to talk a little bit of Houston Rockets. Plus, this guy, we're not the biggest fan of him, but he is opening up apparently like a wine company. We'll talk about that next. But first, Paul is going to tell you about his friends over at PIN.
The Passive Investor Network, baby. Listen, if you want to invest in real estate, there are a couple of ways to do it. But why not do it with people that you can trust, people that will walk you through the whole process? A lot of this stuff is intimidating. You don't want to put money down in something that you don't know where it's going to, but that's what the Passive Investor Network can do for you. They sit down with you and personalize a 5-year plan for you so that you can invest in real estate in the greater Houston area. And guess what? These guys really know what they're doing. They take a look around all town and they find locations, neighborhoods that they think can look better. They invest in those neighborhoods. They put work into those neighborhoods. And Ronnie and his team, I mean, you'll see if you go on one of their bus tours, passiveinvestor.net, enter promo code ESPN to go on one of those bus tours for free. You will see some of the neighborhoods that they're talking about. You'll see some of the properties that they've purchased. And you will see how quickly they can flip some of these properties and turn them into things that can really make you and your family money. Want a little extra cheddar? Real estate's a great way to invest these days. And the Passive Investor Network, again, is fantastic, and we'll walk you through the whole process. You can be involved if you want. You can do some of this stuff on your own, but why not have somebody that knows what they're doing in your corner? That's what the Passive Investor Network can do for you. Passiveinvestor.net is the website. It's passiveinvestor.net. Promo code ESPN to go on the bus tour.
ESPN 97.5. Welcome back to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, there's one thing that you can't deny, which is the Rockets are rebuilding. Now, their rebuild, I think, has been fun to watch. They've had some high draft picks, Steven Silas, Rafael Stone, working together to try to create a fun product after a couple of rough years and things not working out with James Harden. We'll get to James in a minute. Let's talk about NBA cores. Again, off-season articles, but this one from Bleacher Report I thought was really interesting. It ranked the best cores in the NBA. The Rockets came in at number 9. The core, of course, Jalen Green, Alperen Şengün, and then Jabari Smith Jr. It lists the other talent, Tari Eze and Ty Ty Washington, KPJ, etc. Paul, number 9, too high, too low. What did you think?
We actually talked about this last night on Sports Extra on KHOU. I feel TV like
star.
We both are TV stars.
Mm-hmm.
Although I looked alarmingly white on TV, and I'm now thinking long and hard about spray tans in the future. I don't know if it would come across as natural. I think everyone would be like, whoa, what? Because I think everyone knows me to be a vampire-looking mother-you-know-whatter.
We need a spray tan ad. We need We need to be. We need a sponsor. Hey,
listen, I'll do anything for money. I mean, not anything, but yeah. You know, you get what I'm saying.
It's okay.
I'm a little whore when it comes to that stuff. What? Look, I am a cheap person. I like it. I would sell diapers. I would endorse diapers. Paul Gallant here for crapping yourself. Do you need diapers? I'll do it. I don't care. I don't. You know, I'll do whatever it takes to help this station win.
There you go.
Monetary department. As long as I'm getting to wet my beak. Anyway, what was I talking about?
Rockets Young Corps.
Oh yeah, the Rockets Young Corps.
Too high, too low. Ranked number 9, and for context, Bleacher Report ranked the Celtics Corps at number 4. New Orleans, Memphis Grizzlies, ranked number 1 for the best young corps in the NBA.
And Zion Williamson was up there too. So yeah, okay. The Rockets at 9 makes sense. I know that some of the online Rockets fans will get in a tizzy over it, but Jalen Green really didn't come around until the last couple of months of the season. Was that because he figured things out, or was that because teams were gradually starting to check out? I tend to believe it's the former, but I don't think it's something you could entirely rule out. The other thing is, while I like what they got out of Sengun last year, I feel like Kevin Porter Jr. is a net negative. I think he has bad habits. I think he is bad for Jalen Green. He turns the ball over a lot, and he has irrational confidence in his offensive game. And this is what happens when you have guys who are maybe a little bit older that have been on a bunch of different teams, like maybe not quite like Christian Wood, but that are in a situation where they get to score a lot. Bad habits get reinforced. And I feel like the Rockets should stay at 9 until they get rid of Kevin Porter Jr., and then I'll feel better about it. We'll see what happens with Jabari Smith. I love his athleticism, but we've only seen him in summer league action.
Right.
But I think 9, Vanessa,
is
an
appropriate
spot. Hey,
we know people are excited about it, right? Because he was got 100% of the 64 votes on my Houston Young Studs poll on Twitter. Studs. So, okay, Rockets ranked at 9. I have a feeling Rockets fans are not going to like that and are going to think that they should be ranked higher. What do you need to see from this young core to where you think they're going to be, let's say, top 5?
Well, I mean, Jalen Green needs to take another step forward. And, you know, the only way that you get into that top 5 conversation is if you play like a Ja Morant. I mean, that's legitimately what it's going to be about. Is Jalen Green going to become that kind of a player, or is he going to be more like, I don't know, Donovan Mitchell, which is not bad by any means, but there are guys across the league, Donovan Mitchell, I would put Paul George in this conversation, I guess when he's healthy, Jamal Murray, like there's a bunch of players who you feel like they're damn good players, they're a nice piece to be the centerpiece of your franchise, but at the same time, they're not special in a way that the guys at the top of the list are. I think Boston was number 4, and it's because Boston has a very young Jason Tatum who, until the NBA Finals, seemingly was ascending towards being one of the best players in the game. But now Tatum's on that same kind of level where he's like above a Donovan Mitchell and he's above a, Paul George or something like that. But how much further above is he? If Green can all of a sudden elevate his play into the Ja Morant conversation, great. And then the Rockets young core, you can put it up at 3 or something like that. But now 9's fine. And I hope that Rockets fans aren't going to be super sensitive about it like they are about so many things.
A lot of things. Would you drink or try James Harden's new wine? Yes, James Harden is releasing some wine. It's described as smooth, rich, and bold. It's an off-season collaboration.
What a sommelier, just saying generic like words. Congratulations.
I'm kind of over like all things involving James Harden, including but not limited to his restaurant, his attitude, the way he treats other
it
teammates.
Tastes like
the
fat.
Way, yeah, it's whoa.
It tastes like lack of effort on defense. I'm detecting notes of a fat suit. It really feels like you have, I don't know, entitlement and enablement, notes of that too in this wine. I gotta say, as a sommelier, I'm just not feeling it. I'm not vibing with it right now.
What's
a sommelier?
What's a sommelier?
Don't you know? Those are the people that like taste test wines and like say, this tastes of rich mahogany.
I hate those people.
And incense and the hopes and dreams of the United States of America. Like, you know, this ridiculous stuff like that. That's what I would detect in it. Yeah, if someone gave me a bottle of this, I would legitimately just throw it on the floor and break the bottle.
Yeah, let me list the celebrity athlete wines that I would drink before this.
Ooh. Tom Brady avocado wine. Yeah.
I would drink Dusty Baker's wine. He and his family have a winery here in Northern California. I shouldn't say here, but in California. CJ McCollum has wine. Local Houston legend, one of the greatest race car drivers ever, AJ Foyt, has a wine. Cameron Diaz actually came out with an organic wine. Yeah, you like Cameron Diaz. There are plenty of wines that I would drink before I would try this guy's wine.
I think the real question I'm trying to answer right now, Vanessa, is at what point would I sell out for it? Because as I said earlier in this segment, I definitely would sell out on it. And I want to know what you guys, both Sean and you, Vanessa, think. How much do you think it would take for me to become a brand ambassador for James Harden Vino?
$200.
Oh, damn.
Sean, what's up?
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, a couple bottles. Like, if they just send a couple bottles to his house, you'll be like, you know what? Paul Gallant here for James Harden wine.
Yeah, you're not. That's not too far off.
Hashtag ad? So you wouldn't even need money to sell out.
I mean, it is something I like to do, drink. So, yeah, Paul Gallant here because I got a free $20 bottle of James Harden wine.
The first, you know, 80% of it's really good. The last bit leaves a horrible taste in your mouth. But, hey, James Harden wine. I'm Paul Gallant.
Have you ever wanted to have a wine where you could quit on everybody around you and then blame them all for your shortcomings?
Yep.
It's the James Harden wine, available now at Specs and Total Wine and More.
Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, will Paul sell out?
We'll you too you can taste what it's weeks. Like to be overrated and a fraud and someone who takes advantage of the NBA's blind referees. You too can do all of those things with James Harden wine.
We are starting to maybe like a certain NFL players podcast. Plus, Peter King's Football Morning in America has me stressing over a comparison he made to Peyton Manning. I'm angry. That's next.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Administration of employee benefits is a hassle. Let HRNP eliminate those burdens and save you money. Visit HRP.net today. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, we are rolling along on a Monday. Hope everybody's doing good. We appreciate you listening to us. It is 11:32 a.m. local time. It is 9:32 in Los Angeles, where I am, for the Home Run Derby / All-Star festivities. Paul, we've had Tyreek Hill's podcast. We featured segments from Tyreek's podcast on our show a couple of different times.
I gotta give him credit. It's been a good show. Like
he has
done enough to make noise with every single episode, and I did not expect that to come from Tyreek Hill. Now he has said some crazy things, but like
One of the things that he said was that Tua, he would take Tua over Patrick Mahomes any day. So to your point, he may believe these things, he may not, but either way, his podcast is getting hella clicks, hella downloads. So good for Tyreek Hill.
We're bringing the word hella back today, too. I like that.
No cap for real, for real.
No cap for real. So,
bussin.
Look, there's a couple of things when it comes to Tyreek Hill that obviously you kind of have to keep in mind. But I thought it was pretty interesting to see like the most recent comments that were made by Tyreek Hill, which, you know, some of the things that he has said, as you mentioned, I thought it was crazy what he was saying about Tua. I really did. But he brought up a guy that has consistently been discussed as like a potential head coach in the future, Eric Bieniemy. And on that episode, during a conversation with Bills safety Jordan Poyer, which is pretty interesting that they talk because obviously now they're division rivals, number one. But number two, I mean, if I'm Jordan Poyer, I don't know if I want to talk to Tyreek Hill after he stole the Bills' souls at the end of that game in the playoffs. But he said this, our offensive coordinator, Eric Bieniemy, he's like a madman. He was cussing us out all week leading up to the Bills-Chiefs game saying, y'all let these MFs come in here and whoop y'all like that. Like, come on, man, because the Bills beat the Chiefs Sunday night in week five of last year. Y'all got to have some respect on y'all name in this building, in this organization, and stuff like that. And I could just sense the guys' eyes and hearts, the energy. Guys, like, really took that and ran with it the whole week. Practice was perfect. No drops the whole week. Defense flying around. Everyone was doing what they were supposed to do, and we were all on the same page. And I guess it goes back to this weird thing with Eric Bieniemy, where everyone has looked at what the Chiefs' offense has done over the last couple of seasons.
Right.
They have wondered why Eric Bieniemy, the offensive coordinator of those Chiefs teams, has not gotten a head coaching gig. Then we get into conversations about racism and stuff like that. I always have been curious, though, as to why Eric Bieniemy did not get a job. I know that there are a lot of people here that were pushing for the idea of Eric Bieniemy as head coach of the Houston Texans. Before Deshaun Watson's civil misconduct stuff spilled out into the open, that was somebody that I guess he wanted the Texans to interview, to like seriously interview, and they weren't really that into him. Maybe he's a bad interview. I think that might be part of the reason that
I've also heard just from people that cover the league that he has some things in his past that
at Colorado,
lend itself well, and maybe even more than what is known. I don't know that. I don't know the guy. I'm just, you know, what pretty reliable people have told me. I think that we're getting closer to being at a point to where that's not as big of a discussion. I know a lot of young men in their mid-20s, late 20s, early 30s, who are minorities, who are making their way up in coaching circles. And so hopefully within the next 5 years, we do see more of a fair kind of level thing there.
I liked this episode.
Shout out to Tyreek Hill.
That they continue to be like this. And it is interesting, though, because some people are bringing up the fact, like, why is he still talking about Kansas City? Should he stop talking about Kansas City? Because, I mean, he's talking about an experience that he had last season. But whether it's talking about Mahomes or talking about his old offensive coordinator, it does seem like a lot of the subject matter on his podcast before he has played a single down with the Dolphins has been Chiefs, 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 Chiefs. I actually
like
think that's understandable.
About the it's like he keeps talking about an ex-girlfriend.
Are you supposed to move on?
I don't actually mind it because he hasn't played with his new team yet. I will say this, just from a broad perspective, you and I have talked a lot about like athletes and how they use social media, how they use branding, et cetera, et cetera. When you open yourself up this much, it is a very conscious choice. And there are consequences with that choice. So when he's like, oh, I don't understand why people are saying, you started a podcast, you keep talking about the ex-girlfriend, you keep talking about controversial subjects. So as long as he doesn't complain about the attention he receives from this, even when it's negative, I'm cool with it. I actually think it's an interesting look into his time in Kansas City.
Yeah, I do too. I am curious to see if Bieniemy will ever get a job. My big thing against Bieniemy has always not been Bieniemy himself. It's been Matt Nagy also was Andy Reid's second in command, and he went to Chicago.
Good point.
And good God, what a disaster that was. And you can blame it on Mitchell Trubisky or just the Bears being a rough organization all you want, but I mean, they hired Matt Nagy, and good God, things did not go very well for the Bears as soon as they hired that guy who was no longer working with Andy Reid.
Things went well for the Bengals when they hired Zach Taylor and drafted Joe Burrow. Mm-hmm. This morning in Football Morning in America, I saw a quote. Now, Football Morning in America, obviously, Peter King's kind of newspaper type article he releases every Monday. There was a quote here from NBC's Chris Sims that says, quote, Joe Burrow is the closest thing I have seen to Peyton Manning.
Mm.
Now, I don't have the full context of this. I looked for the audio and I could not find it. I'm going to continue to dig for that because I don't want to come down on Chris Sims too hard before I know the multiple things that he said, if that makes sense, the full context of it. But this is a hell of a comparison to make. Put away the fact that I'm from Indy, whatever, who cares. Are you comfortable taking guys that have been in the league for a year or two and comparing them to the Tom Brady's, the Peyton Manning's, the, you know, whatever?
Well, yeah, I am here because, let's be honest, I mean, Joe Burrow's accomplished more to this point in his career than Peyton Manning had at this point.
Peyton Manning had a rough first couple, rookie year was a disaster, and I know that.
I'm surprised that Sims made the Manning comparison too, because I don't think they play particularly similar. I really do think there are a ton of similarities between Brady and Joe Burrow. They stand in the pocket, they hang in there. There was always something with when I watched Peyton Manning where he wasn't as cool in the pocket as Brady was. Now, you could argue that he knew what the other defense was doing significantly better than Brady was. And I would say, yeah, in the first half of his career, definitely. Like Brady, it took Brady a while to become the field general that he became. But Manning in the pocket, I always felt like he was uncomfortable. And I always would notice that if he was under pressure, he would start like tapping with his toes.
He was not great under pressure. Right. I completely agree with you, and I think it's the reason they don't have one of the reasons they don't have more Super Bowls in addition to injuries, the defense being what it was. But no, I mean 100% I agree with you.
And if I'm being totally fair too, I mean I rooted against Peyton Manning very hard growing up, but Manning had a lot of weight on his shoulders until the Colts defense finally caught up with Dwight Freeney and Robert Mathis and Gary Brackett and Bob Sanders. For the 2006 Super Bowl year. I mean, and then that year, he didn't have to play very well in the playoffs outside of in the AFC Championship game, where in the second half, he was awesome. But, like, you know, the Colts offense struggled for a lot of those playoffs. But I guess if we're going to make comparisons between young players and players that we've seen before, it's natural because it's the things that we have just seen. Sometimes we maybe do it a little bit too early.
Right.
But... Right. I think to see, I mean, Burrow with a bad organization got to a Super Bowl in his second year. And in his first year, I mean, he tore his ACL because he was playing behind a patchwork offensive line. Like that,
which worked out well because they got Jamar Chase, but yeah.
You know, maybe as far as comparisons and Luck in the playoffs, that was always his big problem. But like Andrew Luck might be actually an appropriate comparison at this point, because Andrew Luck came into that team, and while... For some reason, Greedy Bear, Ryan Gregson, got the executive of the year because, like, oh, wow, he had the first overall pick. And then he also drafted T.Y. Hilton in the same draft class. Like, Luck was overcoming a lot with that Colts team. Like, they really pressed the reset button, and that he was able to get them to the playoffs as quickly as he did. And then they had that ridiculous comeback against Kansas City. I mean, I think that Luck would be actually a pretty apt comparison. But then their play style is different. Like Luck was faster. Luck is more athletically gifted. So, it's any Burrow comparison should be made to Brady. Forget about the resume. The guy's cool, calm, and collected in the pocket under pressure.
Yep.
And not many quarterbacks are like that.
I don't see the similarities. I was surprised by that quote, but like I said, full disclosure, I did not see the full context. All right. We have more coming up on Vanessa and Gallant. Stay with us.
ESPN 97.5. Breaking down the Houston sports scene with V and Pauly G on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Who says it's too late for love? Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck got married in Las Vegas. They dated, of course, 20 years ago. They called off that first engagement in January of 2004. But true love persists, Paul.
It does persist, even in the wake of unspeakable horrors. Brought upon our nation, brought upon our eyes, like the movie Gigli. True love ultimately won out. I never
what
watched
are your thoughts
movie.
On this?
Yeah, I never watched either. That movie. I gotta say, I did like Jennifer Lopez and Alex Rodriguez. I did. I thought they were cute. I know that's a weird thing to say as a 33-year-old adult man about somebody else's relationship. I also feel like Ben Affleck was doing pretty well with Ana de Armas, who is, I believe, the number one of all female actresses in terms of acting prowess today. I can't wait for this movie that's coming out. She is a very good action star. Like, if you watched her in that cameo that she had in the most recent James Bond, she was great. And I guess there's this other movie that's coming out. It's a Ryan Gosling, Chris Evans movie, The Gray Man or something like that. It's coming to Netflix. She's in it. And I saw some video posted where she was like doing choreography for action. So I guess she's going to kill some people in that too.
Oh, so, there you go. Love
but
it.
They were an item for a little bit. And there was that movie that came out that both Ben Affleck and Ana de Armas were in. I forget what it is. It's on Hulu or something like that. Yeah. I haven't seen it.
Jennifer Lopez was married for, this is her fourth marriage. She was with somebody briefly in the 90s. She was married to
Does Jennifer Lopez have character concerns? 713.
She's the Airbnb and then she had the twins with them.
Yeah, yeah.
Mark Anthony. She had the twins with Mark Anthony and then Ben Affleck. She also, she dated Puff Daddy, I believe.
Was he Diddy at this time or was he Puff Dad? Puff Lion?
No,
that was Snoop Dogg.
He
I'm just
was,
kidding.
That's right. Yeah, it's good to see true love persist.
Have you ever been fooled by the rocks that she's got? Because guess what? She's still Jenny from the Bronx. She used to have
from
a little.
Block.
Now she has Ben Affleck, and she knows where she came from. The Bronx.
Congratulations to Jennifer. I actually join you, Paul, in thinking that she and A-Rod made a good couple just because they both had the kind of glamorous Los Angeles diva thing about them. Ben Affleck just seems so down to earth. He seems like he needs
He's
to be
Boston,
like a
so,
with a woman like me, just saying.
Oh, really? So you are you into Ben Affleck?
Oh, absolutely. Are you kidding me?
Even though he has like a tramp stamp?
I'm into it.
On a guy?
He has more than a tramp stamp. I feel like we've talked about this before. He has a full back tattoo.
Yeah, he looks like he's wearing an Ed Hardy shirt.
It's weird, but you know what?
What in God's name is this thing? Like, what? Hang on a second. Like, who allowed him to do this?
That's why Ben Affleck, like, he just bums me out now. Like,
yeah.
It just makes me sad.
It's just like a walking midlife crisis.
Oh, no. I didn't know he had this.
Oh, it's terrible. It's like a phoenix or a dragon or something.
Oh, that's so bad.
It's one of the worst tattoos ever. And it's way too colorful, too. And it's massive. I mean, it's one of the kind of tattoos that you see if you lost a bet. Or you got drunk with your buddies at a bachelor party or something like that, and then you wake up with something like this. It is outrageous. It is massive. There is no subtlety to it at all. And, yeah.
It's not even like a impulse thing. Like, they had to do that over the course of, like, days, I bet. To, like, color it in.
Yeah.
So Ben Affleck, the internet tells me when he initially got this, he told people that it was for a movie and that it was fake.
No.
Because he realized that it was so bad, and then
we'll get rid of
years
it
later. It's still here. Yeah,
he clearly likes it. I mean, look, if you're gonna get rid of it, you're a rich person in Hollywood. You can get rid of it if you want. You can. It's possible.
I'm horrified by this. Now, would I still take him home? Yes. All right, it's time for the segment we call Garbage Time.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage Time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
Paul, I genuinely cannot believe that this happened. Look, I'm not saying people need to be fired, but there needs to be a reevaluation of decisions made as Fox Sports had to issue an apology because they used the site of the 9/11 landmark and memorial as this place that they placed graphics for Baseball Night in America. So they have a graphic of Boston and a graphic of the Yankees sitting over the 9/11 memorial. Just not a good move.
Yep. Not smart. Does Fox care about 9/11? That's the only thing I can really come away with from that one. I'm just trying to imagine it happening, like where they have the music on in the background. Da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da, and then they have the two logos over it. Yeah, it's not a good look. Not a good move.
Realistically, probably a 19-year-old intern that genuinely didn't realize that spot was what it was. I don't know.
Certainly possible. Yeah, not good. Come on, Fox.
All right, so you may have to visit Albuquerque because you're a big fan of Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah, I am. I'm watching it through for an eighth time. I don't know why. I continue to rewatch it. Better Call Saul, new episode coming out tonight. I probably will be watching that as opposed to the Home Run Derby because there's no Chris Berman. And definitely that as opposed to The Captain. The first of a 20-part series about very marginal, above-average shortstop Derek Jeter, who, speaking of bad teammates, refused to move over from shortstop to third base despite Alex Rodriguez being a better fielder at shortstop. But that's neither here nor there. Yeah, so they're going to put some Breaking Bad statues in ABQ. And that's pretty cool.
That is really cool.
It's my favorite show of all time. It's Walter White and Jesse Pinkman. And, you know, look, we have statues of Confederate generals across the United States. We have statues of all sorts of unsavory individuals. So it's about time that we have statues of fictional meth dealers, you know?
Yeah, I got to tell you, it would be less offensive than probably 70% of the statues of which we have in the United States today.
Are any statues, on a serious note, are any statues really offensive? It's like, all right, it's a bronze thing. Just shouldn't make any.
I don't personally get offended, but other people get very offended.
It is fun to try to cancel, like, a statue. Because I think, like, I do it non-seriously. Like, but the people who do take it seriously, like, they need something in their life. Because it must be, I mean, unless you're, like, sitting around, like, smoking weed at night and you're just thinking to yourself, you know what, I'm going to find a way to cancel George Washington or something like that. Like, PETA, or not PETA, I guess, like, I don't know, some environmentalist would...
PETA's not real.
...cancel George Washington because he cut down a cherry tree. Can't do that.
It gets a little extreme. Listen, it gets hot in Houston, but it has never been so hot that I've wanted to put an ice lolly in my hoo-ha.
Wait, what?
Dr. Eleanor Drager, a UK doctor, had to issue a tweet and a warning, quote, "Your regular reminder that putting ice lollies in your vagina is a bad idea, no matter how hot the weather is. Hashtag sexual health, hashtag sex education." It's not the first time she has had to issue those warnings. Apparently, this is a common thing that women do in the UK where they put popsicles up their hoo-ha to try to cool off when it's hot.
The British just, I mean, why do you think you lost the Revolutionary War? Because you have morons like this. First off, I didn't know, I've never heard of a popsicle called a lolly, first off. Second, I just want you to say one more time the female body part that you first described, because it sounded a lot like Elliot Reed from Scrubs, who is terrified of saying the word hoo-ha. On the air. Your hoo-ha.
My hoo-ha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I like that. I like that word.
It hoo-ha. Just feels weird to say.
It's a weird sounding word. I always feel weird saying that word too. I'm like, oh, I don't know.
Like, I don't even.
It's
like
just aggressive.
Like, I'll say pee-pee before I'll say the other thing, which is ridiculous.
Well, this is a kids show, so
it's
this
true.
The kids love. The kids love us, according to a family.
That's what we heard.
Shout out to our young vegetarians. You guys rock, and you are. I cannot emphasize this enough. The future of America.
Yo, all
right. They are for real.
No
Florida
cap.
Quarterback Anthony Richardson drops his nickname, AR-15. So all of these kids now in college are getting branded. So his brand was an AR with a rifle.
Oh,
and
damn,
since his
dude.
Number is 15, they called him AR-15. After all these mass shootings, he issued a statement saying, "After discussions with my family and much thought, I decided to no longer use the nickname AR-15. Blah, blah, blah.
Now semi-automatic rifle 15.
We're no longer associated with the assault rifle that has been used in mass shootings, which I do not condone." Look, I actually love the nickname from kind of a badass standpoint, but with everything going on, this was a smart decision.
Yeah, I got to change it to like bow and arrow 15. Or
it's crazy.
Oh,
they,
God.
It's sword crazy they 15. Gave him Tim Tebow's number. That's the craziest part, is that he had number 15.
I agree. True. Yeah,
didn't
wait a
think
second.
About that.
What is going on? What is happening?
Is Tebow's number not retired?
Maybe
that's
it's
ridiculous.
Like honored, but they still give it out? I don't know.
He's the greatest that's player in their weird. History.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no debating that, Vanessa. Like that's ridiculous.
No,
really?
No, no. I wasn't debating it. I'm just saying that the fact that they let him have the number and then he was able to even use it in the first place for that nickname.
Yeah.
Were they like, it's such a cool nickname, we have to give it to you?
I mean, you have to cancel Anthony Richardson. Shouldn't be canceled for his nickname. He should be canceled for stealing godly valor.
godly valor.
Tim Tebow, a lot of people are saying it, but also a divine one, much like my Lord and Savior Tom Brady. You know, some people like consider Tim Tebow to be, I don't know, like the equivalent of Peter in a religion that worships quarterbacks that played for teams I grew up rooting for.
If you are a white, vanilla, boring football player, Paul Gallant
watch your
is
mouth.
In your
You watch your mouth. Tim Tebow.
Says the girl.
Tim Tebow, you know what? He promised that no one was going to try harder than him over the coming weeks after they lost to Ole Miss. And guess what? By golly, they did try hard, and they won the national title.
Shout out to virgins. All right, that's been another episode of Vanessa and Gallant, Sean Mapes, Paul Gallant. We appreciate you. And we will be with you tomorrow. Coming up next, you got Joel Blake, Jeremy Branham, and the Killer Bees.
Peace.
ESPN 97.5.